Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Joe Zimmel and Valerie Friedman.
Faith here with a welcome toast. It was Fernand Pointe who said, "I like to start off my day with a glass of champagne. I like to wind it up with champagne too. To be frank, I also like a glass or two in between. It may not be the universal medicine, but it does you less harm than any other liquid. Please feel free to consume this show podcast in small bites or eat the whole thing."
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, where we invite you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. Oh, we have all kinds of things coming up on this show. We're testing out a couple of olive oils, one from Georgia, which is a green peanut oil, and one from Jovial Foods, which is based right here in Connecticut. They also have production in Tuscany and Italy. Beautiful, beautiful olive oil. So we're going to taste test those on the show. We're going to get into hearty, luscious soups because it's that time of year. And if you're counting calories, you can make these so filling and so delicious. We have the author of Vittles, Appalachian food and all the special treats from that region. And so that's in our third segment. I am with my food buddies, Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, and Alex Province, wine broker in Hartford, Robin Doyen Aiken, senior producer of the show, and we're going to get into soups, but first...
Drum roll, please.
It is that time of year. If you want to surprise someone for Valentine's Day earlier in the week, February 9th to be exact, we are doing it again. This is always a sellout. It's the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze signature event, our heart-to-heart champagne dinner dance. Where else can you go to a dinner dance? I think that's why it sells out, and the food is delicious. Mm. The area's top chefs all come together.
How fun.
And this time, the theme is going to be a night in Italy. So there are going to be amazing dishes paired with luscious wines. February 9th, 6 p.m. at the River House at Goodspeed Station. It is so beautiful to be in at that time of year. And we want to say thanks to our presenting sponsors, Yukon Health Calhoun Cardiology Center, with additional support from the River House, Fasha's Chocolates, and Power Station Events. I'm going to give you an online site for reservations, but we're working on the menu right now. I'm going to tell you soon what's on that menu, but thinking about dishes from Lydia Bastianich.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I am thinking about the lemon risotto that we had in Italy and that I have in New York. These beautiful wines to pair with this food.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about chocolate and
desserts.
Cakes and this is going to be something. And of course, that champagne coming in the door and the hors d'oeuvres. And the dress is anything you want it to be. As festive as you want or as down home as you want, it's up to you. Here is the website for reservations. Visit wnprhearttoheart.org. That's wnprhearttoheart.org. And we hope to see you there. We know it's going to be a sellout, so jump right in, my friends.
Yeah, we're going to be there.
Dancing.
Yeah,
dancing.
We are. We do. We dance like crazy all night long. Okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. Oh, soups. Let's get into this because it's that time of year, whether you're watching calories because you're thinking about getting into a bathing suit, if you are just wanting the warmth, the comfort, and often the ease of what a stewy, luscious soup can do. We have recipes for you on the site, foodschmooze.org. We're going to be talking about our soup favorites that we make. Alex is going to bring back his winter gazpacho. I challenged him to do it, and he did it last year. It is absolutely delicious. Chris, we just had his soups, and they're knockouts. We got one from Robin that she's going to talk about. And on Facebook, if you'd like to join us, we want to hear from you. All right, let's start with your pasta fazool, Chris.
Gosh.
This was so good.
And it was.
Classic, too, right? And for the winter, hearty. And I have one trick that I use, and it's not in the classic, but I put it in this one, and it just makes it for me. And that's pepperoni.
Oh, it really
it has a stick of pepperoni that I chop up into little pieces, and it just adds to the flavor of the broth.
So pasta fazool, for people who are just been living on another planet, perhaps, is kind of a bean soup with lots of vegetables.
And a little ditalini pasta.
Yep, and unfailingly delicious. But Chris, you knocked it out of the park with this one.
Ready? Olive oil in a pan with onion, carrot, celery, and that one stick diced up of pepperoni all go in the pan together, and you just saute that for a few minutes to get it all going, and then I hit it with a little bit of white wine. That gives it a nice acidic bump, and then one can of tomatoes,
doesn't
chopped tomatoes.
Doesn't matter whether peeled, unpeeled, chopped, whole.
It doesn't matter. I like the chopped ones because you have to do the least to them, so all you have to do is open the can, dump it right in.
And that's with my the juice and everything.
With the juice and everything. You don't have to strain them. You don't have to chop them. You don't have to do anything. And then I use three different kinds of beans. I use red beans, kidney beans, and pink beans.
But and do you buy them in a can?
I buy them in a can. And then those
rinse
I don't.
Them.
I don't even rinse them. I just dump them. If there's nothing in the can, but look at the ingredients. If it's just salt and beans and water, you don't have to rinse them.
With the liquid or?
No liquid. Just drain them.
Okay.
And then put them right in there. And then I add a 32-ounce box of chicken broth. Get a good one with, you know, low amounts of sodium. Kitchen Basics, my favorite, but Swanson's. I mean, there's so many out there that are good right now. And then a little bit of water just to, you know, lessen the sodium of those box broths. And then I cook that until everything is nice and soft. And then I add a little of fresh oregano. Mm. And then the pasta, which I've pre-cooked, I add that right at the end. And then dollop pesto on top.
That's so
what takes
good.
It home. The pesto takes it home.
And you can do store-bought pesto,
of course.
Of course.
There's so many good brands.
Oh, my. It was really, really good, Chris.
Right?
It feels so filling.
Hugs you.
And yet it feels like it's good for you.
Yeah.
And I just really love it.
It's fun to say. Pasta fazool.
That's what's for dinner. People always do this as appetizers. I mean, I don't know. I think this is the way I eat. This is a meal.
Oh, definitely.
Soup as bread dinner. And a glass of wine.
This is what we're doing on this show. Mm-hmm. Soup as dinner. Mm-hmm. Soup as the main meal. So we think of it as, soup is really a stew. What's the difference between those two things? Because I like to put protein in my soup. And, you know, a fair amount of it along with all the vegetables and things. So what's the difference? This is soup as a meal. And it's hot right now. Okay, here we go. All right, Alex, take us to Spain.
You know, surprisingly in Spain, they eat soup. That's their main dish every day for lunch. Visiting my grandmother in Sevilla, you would have what they call like garbanzo, you know, cocido. And every meal at lunchtime is soup.
And you have this recipe on our website, too. So describe the bean soup that you're making right now.
In the northwest part of Spain, in Galicia, they make their own this broth called caldo gallego. It's a white bean soup. And you soak white beans, and they probably had different ones in Spain, but you can use navy beans or whatever ones you find at the grocery store. You soak them overnight. Put them in a stock pot. You put in a chunk of pancetta, a few pork ribs, all this stuff you can find at the grocery store. It's that like meaty, bony chunks of stuff. So you need pork, beef, you can put some bacon in if you want, and you just bring it up to a boil. As soon as it's boiling, you turn down the heat and you want to clean it up, get the foam, you know, that comes off the, like you would any other soup. And this is going to cook for maybe an hour and a half. You can put in a chorizo, like a whole chorizo that you get at the grocery store.
So just put the whole thing in uncut.
The whole uncut. Just nice. If it's the uncured kind, then poke a few holes in the casing. Because otherwise it expands and blows up when you try to cut it. So and you can also use the cured one too.
Yeah,
you just
cured.
Put it in. About an hour and a half in, 2 hours in, you can take, you know, a big, huge bundle of kale or turnip, you know, greens or Swiss chard or spinach if you want. And the stuff is going to dissipate. You put in a huge amount.
Cram it in
there. And you fill it to the top of the stock pot. Yep. And it's going to seem like it's absurd, but
Trust me, it'll all fill in there.
And then you take some potatoes, and they'll peel the potatoes. And like my grandpa does, when they cut, they take a paring knife, they start cutting through the potato, and then when they get to the very end, they snap the knife so it comes off as a chip. And I don't know why they believe this, but they don't cut all the way through, and supposedly it thickens up the soup. But so you pile a couple of pounds of potatoes on top,
yep.
You put the lid on, and you cook it for another 45 minutes to an hour. And what you get when you take the lid off is the greens have disappeared into this beautiful broth.
Yeah.
The beans are so flavorful and rich and nutritious.
The potatoes just disappear.
Oh, my gosh. And I didn't mention anything about olive oil or garlic or onions. A lot of these dishes, the simpler they are, the better they are. The recipes, you know, on the website.
It is. Food. Why didn't we ask you to bring that? Foodschmooze.org.
Next time I want that.
Chris wants someone to cook for him for a change.
Exactly.
That sounds awesome.
That is really good.
Because my grandma makes it, I think it's healthy.
Well,
sure. Yeah, you go with that.
Nothing about it sounded unhealthy.
So here is a soup that I love to make, and I just made this the other night, and it's, you know, Thai, supposedly. This is adapted from an Epicurious recipe last year. It's chicken kind of stew with coconut milk and broccoli and coriander and lime. A lot of this is store-bought because there's a green curry paste. We're in the market. We saw green curry paste in a jar in the international section. Every supermarket has it. You put that in with the coconut milk. And you can use frozen broccoli or fresh broccoli for something like this, because in the end, you're going to put it in batches into the blender and make a creamy soup out of it. And then you're going to add the shredded chicken, rotisserie chicken.
Mm-hmm.
So some people have an immersion blender. I didn't have one at my disposal. And then at the very end, a squeeze of fresh lime. So
brightens it right up.
Yeah, and the coconut milk is just really a nice touch. And when you add the lime to it, it really does make it. And you can, if you're someone who likes a little bit of heat or a little snap in something, you could throw in some,
like,
you know,
cayenne pepper flakes.
So spinach leaves in here, cilantro, scallions. Some people do crispy onions. The original recipe called for that, you know, crispy shallots that you sprinkle on the top. When I made it, I didn't do that. You know, I kind of forgot that step, and I just thought, oh, whatever, I don't feel like doing that. But it is hearty. You can put as much shredded chicken. I put tons in the soup because it really makes me feel like I'm having a main meal. And then there's the whole broth around it. So my soup is stew-like, and it is pretty darn good. You know, you can fool with it.
Yeah.
You know, add your own. I added the chicken to the original recipe. That wasn't in there. And you know, if you're tired of chicken, we were saying to each other, oh my God, we could add shrimp to this. It would be fantastic. Or
scallops.
Or an egg.
Chunks of...
You know, raw egg sort of at the end.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Sure.
Okay, so
like
you can fool with this. This is on the website.
If you took peanuts and cooked them in there and then sprinkled a little bit off. There's so much you can do with coconut milk.
Okay, so that recipe, Thai coconut chicken, broccoli, and coriander soup with fresh lime, in other words, cilantro. If you don't like cilantro, put parsley in. That's on the website, foodschmooze.org. What are we doing? We are celebrating soup on the show today, soup as a main meal. And the idea, Chris, is to make tons of it.
Yes.
Make a double batch if you can. Make extra no matter what. And then into containers, even Ziploc bags when it cools down, and into the freezer it goes. And then you can just pull it out as the weeks go on. If you get tired of it because you've had it too much in 1 week, in a couple weeks, 3 weeks, a month, you're going to want that again.
Snow days, that's when I bring it out.
And it only gets better. There you go.
So this on our frozen containers, I take a piece of like butcher's tape and I'll write whatever the soup is, and then I'll put a parentheses who made it. And then I'll say like if it's good or excellent to entice me when it's a frozen block.
Yeah.
Oh, this one says good on it. So
then do you get depressed the other way? You know?
Yeah, you're like, all that's left is the bad soup.
Like
no bad soup.
Food
though.
Affective disorder. It's like, oh, it's just an okay soup tonight. That's funny. That's actually a good idea. Do you put the dates on? Because So Robin Doyon Aiken.
Our favorite soup, the one that Steve makes in our house, is a lentil soup.
Oh, my favorite.
Yeah. And the recipe originally is from Epicurious. If you went to Epicurious and just put in lentil soup, you're going to find the one that we make. It's the most plain, simple one.
But you have it on the website.
We have a few adaptations. The one on Epicurious calls for chicken broth, but we just go all out vegetarian and use vegetable broth because we just like it better. Super simple. Lentils, celery, carrots, a bay leaf, you know, salt, pepper, couple spices. And our kids, they have an aversion to lentils, so it's just Steve and I. We make a huge batch, eat it that night, usually a Sunday night because we let it cook for a long time, maybe an hour it cooks for. We have half then and freeze the other half from later in the week.
Do you vary it from year to year? I mean, do you find, you know, you don't even look at the recipe anymore, you just start throwing it together and then it's find yourself adding things?
By now, it's like Steve kind of sticks to his basic one. Because we've got it the way we like it
now. It's a tradition.
Yeah. Steve makes it the same way every time, and I love it. I look forward to it every time.
I know. And do you freeze?
Yes.
I see that you can play with yours, too. Just the way you can play with any of these soups we've been talking about.
Yeah,
I was thinking hers putting his chorizo sausage like he had in the beans.
He wants to put it in
everything. I know, you got to have it.
And
now.
I would add one clove of garlic.
Garlic, yeah.
But not chop it up so you can fish it out after.
What I like about Robin's, besides that it just sounds good, in its simplicity, I like, because you're going to be able to taste all the things in it. But I like it that there's a vegetarian one here among all of ours.
Mm-hmm.
We ate so many lentils growing up. My mom swears that they are so rich in iron. So supposedly, you know, it's important to eat your lentils.
I just love it because it really feels like a meal. You know,
yeah.
If you have a bowl of lentil soup and a little crusty bread, you know, when you're done, you don't feel like, you know, you want a pork chop or something after. Mm-hmm. It's like that really was dinner.
Yeah,
I'm full the rest of the night.
Lentils do that. I think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much fun when you do have leftovers with a soup like this. It just gets better. And you can bring a container to work the next day. Just pop it in the work microwave the way we do here. And you're good to go. I really like that. So we've got more soups coming up. We've got an olive oil tasting. And we have a peanut oil discovery from Georgia. An amazing farm in Georgia. It's remarkable green peanut oil. This is something. I'd read about this. Everybody was talking about it. I called the farmer and he said, yep, I'll get you a bottle. He said, it's very hard to come by right now. New York Times did something on this. And he said, but I'll sneak a bottle. And he did. It's arrived. And we want to tell you all about this and this olive oil from Tuscany. That's part of our celebration of Italy, that dinner dance we're going to do on February 9th. And we hope you'll join us. For tickets, WNPRhearttoheart.org. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org with all of our soup recipes and more to come. We'll be right back.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
We have a free podcast for you, meaning you won't miss a drop of pleasure on this show. It simply means that we can send you the show. You sign up for it once, and then boom, it just arrives on your smart device, and you can listen whenever you want on your schedule. It's the way more and more people,
so
as
convenient.
In almost everybody
do
does now. So you just go to foodschmooze.org,
really,
and you'll
simple.
See that it just says sign up. And it's not a way for us to send you 15 million things. We just give you the podcast. So we are always online, as you know, at foodschmooze.org. And I'm with my treasured food buddies. We have a new one. You know we're with Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Provence, and we also have Mark Raymond, who is a wine broker here from who lives in Wethersfield. All of our senior contributors, Robin Doyon Aiken is here, senior producer of the show. We're going to get back to more soups. What we have coming up, and these are all on the website, we have one from Chris Prosperi, his Pozole, and you can get it in a can in many, many supermarkets. We're going to explain that to you. Mm. I challenged Alex Provence last year, was it?
Last year.
I said, I challenge you, since you have the award-winning summer gazpacho, can you use canned tomatoes and make a killer winter gazpacho? And he did it. It's fantastic. And we're repeating it this year. So Alex is going to tell us about that. And Mark, you're going to tell us about
Cullen Skink.
I just love the name. Say it again.
Skink? Cullen Skink.
This is the food of my people.
This is from Scotland. Yeah, Scotland.
Cullen Skink.
It is so good. I just love saying it.
You just want to make it.
I just want to tell people that's what's for dinner.
Cullen Skink.
Come on over.
You're having what? Cullen Skink.
And we're going to tell you about a new soup place that has opened in the West Village in New York. And in our next segment, we have Ronnie Lundy, who has done a book from the Appalachian Mountains, and it's called Vittles. We look at it and think it says victuals, but it's vittles. That's how it's said. So we're going to get to all that. Let's do quickly our olive oil tasting. We've got Jovial brand. This is a company that is based both in Italy, in Tuscany, and in Stonington, Connecticut. We love these folks. And you know we love Ariston olive oil from Greece.
Beautiful stuff.
And the person who brings that in, Tomas Dukas, lives in Wethersfield, and he introduced that oil to us
years ago.
And we are persistent champions of that olive oil. It's terrific. Here's a new one. This is Jovial. This isn't brand new, but their new season of olive oil has just come out. And this is organic, extra virgin olive oil, first cold pressed. And they do the ancient varieties of olives, Favarol, Grignano, Nostrano. And those olives were brought by the Romans to the Veneto region about 1,000 years ago. What Jovial does is they try to preserve the ancient traditions, and they work with the local farmers. And we just tasted this one, and it has that little pepper kick at the end. And I thought it was really, really good. So that's Jovial brand. It's organic. And we told you about this olive oil right online, foodschmooze.org. Okay, here we have, this is
the drum roll, right?
This is another one.
Chevy Chase.
This is totally new.
Okay, there's a place in Georgia, in Pitts, Georgia, and they have, it's called Oliver Farm. It's a heritage farm. And the man who runs that farm somehow thought to himself, not just that I'm going to do a peanut oil,
Which wouldn't surprise you from Georgia.
Oh, yeah. He said, I'm going to do a green peanut oil. He's picking the peanuts really young and making this most fabulous.
Delicate.
Oh, my goodness. Right. It is unbelievable. It's green peanut oil. It's from Oliver Farm. They press it right locally and bottle it right there in Pitts, Georgia. And they are five generations on this farm, hundreds of years at this place. And he's very, very proud of it. And the place went crazy because the New York Times did something on this and said it was quite good. And it was so intriguing to me that I called the farmer, the next morning, said, congratulations. And it sounded like it was chaos where he was. And he said,
The phone hasn't stopped ringing. I have one bottle left.
I said to him, Well, I'm going to do that to you again. I think because when our food schmooze people get a hold of this, it is delicious.
We love it.
What would you drizzle this green peanut oil on?
Because I call these finishing.
This is a small bottle.
I call these finishing oils. These are not things that you want to cook with or saute with or even blend into a salad dressing. These are things you just want to drizzle over things. I keep thinking of a fish, like a pan-seared light fish.
Like a flounder?
A flounder or a cod or a sole or something like that. Or even salmon would do it too. Then just before you serve it, just take a little quarter teaspoon of this stuff and just drizzle it over each filet. The aroma, right? I think Robin said it. It has more in the nose than it does in the taste. I'm telling you, when this stuff hits you, it just makes you hungry.
Nice. It really does. And I would drizzle it on one of my favorite soups to make in the winter is this African peanut stew, which has peanut butter in it and chopped peanuts.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
You can find it right off. I would put just a light drizzle on the top of each bowl just before serving. It would be incredible and give it quite a richness. So extraordinary.
I'd fry an Elvis Presley peanut butter and banana sandwich in it.
Wow.
peanut. Decadent.
Okay.
No, I think everyone needs to try this because it's a new flavor.
So we have all of these. We have
stuff.
These posted on the website right now, foodschmooze.org. Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. We want to get back to soups.
Yeah.
And Mark has got quite a doozy over there. so we're going to get to that. But we want to talk with you on Facebook about what soups you are making. I mean,
favorites.
What is your – this is soup as a meal. Soup as a meal that is filling, is luscious? This isn't about deprivation. This isn't about just sitting around having a broth.
No.
You want to feel like you're having a meal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people are concerned with calories this time of year. And I think these soups are a great way to feed yourself richly and yet not get overwhelmed. They're very filling.
Yeah.
You need to make them delicious.
Satisfied.
They're satisfying. Some people get very into cleaning the toxins, as I never know what that means, from their bodies. And I think, isn't that magical?
Yeah. Isn't that what your liver does?
And so they just like clear broth. And I think, more power to you. But I can't do that. I'm just looking around for what.
Now
it's time for an ice cream sundae, is what I say if I just have broth. Anyway.
I just love the whole idea of just warming you up for that. You know, it's a snowy day on a Sunday afternoon or Saturday or any day for that matter. And you just get to warm up and have a nice.
And we were saying earlier,
bowl of soup.
Yeah, you can do extra. You don't make a soup without doing extra because you can just throw it in the freezer and have it all the time. And
Alex was saying when we ate the soup, as soon as we finished, he's like, I'm warm. I'm hot. I'm like, it warms you up from the inside out on those chilly days where you can't, like we had one the other day where it was just raw outside.
Not
cold, but that raw feeling you could never warm up. You eat a bowl of soup like these, and then all of a sudden you warm up from the inside out.
Think of all the money you save on the thermostat. Just eat hot soup. Keep the house at 55.
All day long.
So I want to tell you, please talk with us right now on Facebook because we're having this conversation, all of us, about how to do a soup as a meal, especially this part of the year, and what is delicious to you, how do you do it, what's your favorite, is there a place you go that makes an incredible soup, and you know, you think, I'm taking this home, what is that, you know, what are you doing with soups this time of year, what do you store in the freezer, give us your ideas, no matter how unusual. And we're on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze on Facebook. Talk with us right now about your favorite soup and how you do it. Okay, Mark Raymond, senior contributor.
So I have friends that live up on the island of Grand Manan, which is just off the coast of Bar Harbor in Maine.
Oh.
And it's actually part of Canada. And their names are the Kronks. They come down, you know, three, four times a year to visit their daughter who lives close to us. And so they always ask, hey, what can we bring you? What can we bring you? Because they have amazing seafood up there. So they brought me back some smoked haddock. And I love to eat it just as it is. Mm. It's almost like fish beef jerky. It's absolutely delicious with that wonderful smokiness. Mm-hmm. But I looked up a recipe. It comes from Scotland. It's called Cullen Skink. That's Cullen S-K-I-N-K.
And this is on our website, poochmoose.org. Go ahead.
And the ingredients are pretty simple. It's a pound of smoked haddock, whole milk, but you don't have to use whole milk. It's got butter, a diced onion, or you could use leeks, and then two large potatoes, salt and pepper, and then fresh parsley. And you put it all together, and you have this amazing...
Do you chop up the smoked haddock?
So you start by simmering the smoked haddock in either water or your milk. Oh, yeah. And then you pull that aside, and then you take the fish out of that. And then you go back into your pan with the onions and the potatoes, and you just kind of saute that all up with the butter. And then you throw back in, you flake the fish apart, put it in there, pour your milk or water broth back into it. And then you just kind of let it simmer for a little while.
Wow.
I put in a bay leaf. Yeah. It's like a fish chowder, a smoked fish chowder.
Yeah.
And it is so
delicious.
I like it.
And I love the name.
What a good idea. Yeah.
One more time.
So it's from, the region of Cullen in Scotland. That's where it gets its name. Yeah. The name skink refers to a part of the fish bones, or it's a local dialect. I could really understand.
It's complicated.
It was complicated. But you know what? You've given us something to serve to our friends, and they're going to be like, "Huh? Wow,
we're having Cullen skink tonight. Come on!" I tell you, my kids absolutely love this.
Oh, sure, because it's fish chowder.
Yeah,
because it is.
And that smokiness.
Would you put a little corn, a little canned corn, or something?
You could do that. I was thinking.
Frozen bacon? Corn?
Yeah. A little.
Oh.
Everything's better with bacon. Oh.
It really would be good.
Seriously, it really would be
a little
good.
Smoky bacon.
Yeah, simmer that bacon in with the onions and then put everything back together.
Wow, I love this. Okay, that's a great idea. And you, if you don't have a friend in this place in Maine, don't forget.
You can get smoked
haddock. A lot of fish markets carry.
Can get you.
Smoke
haddock.
Smoke haddock.
And oyster crackers.
Oyster crackers, of course, to finish.
Ah, that
or just a nice little wedge of bread, crispy bread, crusty bread.
So the recipe for Cullen skink and all the other soups we've been talking about on the show, if you're just joining us, we had Alex's, how do we say it in Spanish, bean soup?
Caldo gallego.
Caldo gallego. And we had Robin's lentil. We had Chris's pasta fajol. We have Cullen skink. Yeah. And we had my coconut lime.
Which looks delicious.
Chicken, coconut milk, lime chicken, coriander business with the shredded rotisserie chicken. So you don't have to make anything. You just buy the green curry paste. It just comes together beautifully.
Like easy soups.
And broccoli. Yeah. So that's the other thing in the soup. You can use frozen if you want. Okay. All those soups are posted. You're talking with us. We love it on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze because we want to hear from you about your soups. In about a minute, we're going to talk with Ronnie Lundy, who is the author of Vittles, and it's the food of Southern Appalachia. And she might have a couple ideas for us about soup. But let me tell you that there is a soup place that has opened in the West Village in New York called Good Stock. And they make their soup out in this commissary in Queens. And then there's this new food hall at Grand Central Terminal right next door. It's called Urban Space Vanderbilt, and they sell the soups there. And there's a roasted tomato, ribollita, kimchi, and their special is a gumbo. And you just sit at these big communal tables. Pretty cool. Good Stock in the West Village and also at Urban Space Food Hall at Grand Central Terminal if you want to just take containers home with you.
Nice.
So before we go to our new cookbook, we want to say special thanks to Paula Pierce and Jason Black. They are our associate recipe editors. So that's how those recipes get on our food site. Paul Pierce and Jason Black, we adore you for doing this. And we bet you're a little famous now. That's what we think is probably happening.
They're famous to me.
They're famous to me, too. They're rock stars, we say, about them. Okay, here we go. Alex's Winter Gazpacho is next. We love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. For an on-demand podcast of the show, go to foodschmooze.org where you see all of our recipes and all kinds of recommendations. And we'll be right back. This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life and coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York. New York means Westchester County, the east end of Long Island. That's the Hamptons, of course, included. So south and north forks. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken. And to hear the show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. You can see everything we talk about, all of our curated recommendations, at foodschmooze.org. That's where everybody goes, and we love talking with you there and on Facebook. Okay, in just a moment, we're going to speak with Ronnie Lundy, the author of Vittles. But first, quick on this soup, Alex, I challenged you last year to make a winter gazpacho. So how could you take canned tomatoes and turn it into something we love as much as we love summer gazpacho? And you did it. So we're going to bring that back again this year. That recipe is on the site. Tell us how you did it.
It's so easy. So on a big baking sheet, take garlic, some onion, little onions that you roughly chop, a red pepper, some potatoes that you peel. You're going to coat it with olive oil, a little salt. Roast it for 30 minutes, and you're going to carefully put that into a blender. You're going to take your can, your 20-ounce can of whole tomatoes. And Diane on the website suggested using the fire-roasted tomatoes, which seems like a great idea. You're going to blend that together. You're going to, with it running, like you would the summer gazpacho, you're going to drizzle your olive oil in and a couple tablespoons of red wine vinegar. And that's it. The hot vegetables that have been blistered and roasted and covered with olive oil are going to heat up the tomato. And you end up with this just creamy, rich, decadent winter gazpacho.
I love that. A big loaf of thick bread with butter, and how good is that going to be?
It's amazing.
Or grilled cheese on the side.
Different than the summer one, but just as good, just in a different way, right?
Yeah.
I think he hit it out of the park.
I was inspired. My grandpa used the potatoes. So that's where I got the idea from.
That was it's a good way to thicken rather than just putting bread in the way that people do. Excellent, excellent job.
Thank you.
When we had it last year, we couldn't believe it. It was just a knockout. So on the website for you right now, foodschmooze.org. And also, speaking of websites, if you're just joining the show, people pile in every 15 minutes. We wanted to say that you can surprise somebody because Valentine's Day week, February 9th, we're doing it again. It's a Faith Middleton Food Schmooze signature event, heart-to-heart champagne dinner dance. And top chefs create these amazing dishes, course after course, with wines from Santa Carolina, thanks to Mark Raymond, our wine broker. And the theme this year is a night in Italy. And, oh, boy, you are going to see some dishes. So think of the most beautiful Italian food. That is February 9th, 6 p.m. at the River House at Goodspeed Station. We want to say thanks to presenting sponsor Yukon Health Calhoun Cardiology Center, with support from the River House, Fasha's Chocolates, and Power Station Events. For tickets, go to WNPR heart to heart.org. WNPR heart to heart.org. This cookbook came in and I grabbed it. I thought, wow, this is interesting. Somebody has done something quite extraordinary. And I'm talking about Ronnie Lundy. She has done this book called Vittles. And it's spelled, it looks like victuals, but only some Yankees would say that, I think. We're talking about vittles, as it's known in Appalachia, and or Appalachia. So Ronnie Lundy is with us, and she is going to talk about the Appalachian mountain culture and the food that comes from there. We're talking about Kentucky and West Virginia and Virginia and the beautiful, beautiful food that can come from this region. Ronnie is from Corbin, Kentucky, and has been chronicling the people in southern Appalachia for a long, long time. She's a cookbook author and has been doing recipes and other cookbooks. And here she is on the show. Welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Oh, thank you all for having me. This is great.
It's really great to have you with us, too. So for people who've never been, do you say Appalachia or Appalachia?
Either pronunciation is technically correct, but in the southern Appalachians, we say Appalachia.
If you're, you know, from this part of the country where we are in the Northeast, and you've never been there, what would you say represents the mountain food?
The best way I can describe it is people have become very familiar with Southern food in the last 10 years or so. There's just been a strong resurgence of interest in Southern food, which is based on the garden and uses pork not just as a center of the table meat, but as a seasoning, lots of corn and cornbread in it. So the mountain foodways are Southern food in those respects, but the Appalachian Mountains, Southern Appalachians, differ from the rest of the South in that we have winter, and we have a much shorter growing season, and we have much colder weather. So we do a lot of preserving. We do a lot of slow cooking, winter-type foods that come in. We're famous for our country ham in this area. And we're less famous than the rest of the South for something like barbecue, because when you slaughtered a hog in the mountains, you were going to eat from that animal for the rest of the winter. So you didn't invite everybody over for a big meal. You invited everybody over to help you cut the pieces up, salt and put it away, make bacons, make things like sausage. And then you also did the same thing with the fruits of your garden and the orchard.
This is kind of funny, Ronnie, because as I was looking at your book, I thought to myself, we are so similar in our food in the Northeast, in New England, and your food in Appalachia, in the mountains.
Yes.
We have the same kind of issues in terms of length of growing season, not quite as short as yours. But let's start with one. This is one I know that comes from your mother in a way. This is Cole Cannon.
Right.
And she used to want mashed potatoes on the table.
Right. Yeah. My mother had, I don't want to say strict, but we ate kale. Again, this is another one of those climate and geographic things. Deeper in the South, people eat a lot of collards. Collards grow best in a longer, hotter season with sandy soil. But we ate a lot of kale in the mountains, and turnip greens and mustard greens added in with the kale to spike it up. And my mother would low simmer that whatever greens with some pork on the back of the stove until it became very silky, almost silky tender. And then that's what would be the main dish for dinner with cornbread. But you always had mashed potatoes, and you always had a raw onion. She wouldn't have dreamed of putting those greens on the table without a pot of mashed potatoes and onions. She went so far as to instruct you to put a little of the greens and the potato on your fork at the same time.
She knows what.
Oh yeah.
She knew what was good.
So this is a kind of Irish stew that has kale and butter and green cabbage and onion and garlic, bay leaf, ground mace, ground white pepper, ground mustard, cayenne pepper, a little bit of light beer, chicken broth, red skin potatoes, some heavy cream, and some bacon. Imagine all this bacon and greens and onions sitting on top of these mashed potatoes. It's sort of like a bacon shepherd's pie somehow, you know, I mean, without that meat in there. So very cool. Very, very cool. Now, I noticed that in cultures around the world, because where their potatoes are grown, everybody seems to fry up or roast somehow shredded potatoes. And that's how we got latkes. And that's how we got something that you have in your book here, roasty.
Right. One of the things that I wanted to do with this book was bust up the myth that Southern Appalachia is a monoculture. One of the things that you hear said a lot is that we're all Scotch-Irish in descent, and that is totally not true. We do have a lot of Scotch-Irish people who came, but there was also German and English and French. And then in the beginning of the 19th century, we started having immigrants from the rest of Europe coming into the Appalachians. And so there were several Swedish settlements throughout Appalachia in the 1800s, and one of them still continues in Helvetia, West Virginia. And there is a marvelous restaurant there. Do you guys know Chef Edward Lee?
I don't.
Oh, my gosh. Get him on the show. He's a delightful human being. Anyway, he is the chef in Louisville, Kentucky, and went with me on the road trip, one of my road trips, and we ended up in Helvetia. He, I think, thought that I was totally endangering his life because you wind down a mountain with coal trucks coming back at you.
Oh, wow.
You land at this little Swiss restaurant, and it was marvelous, and everything that we ate there was wonderful, but these fried potatoes were beyond compare. And it's hard to make, I mean, I don't know if you can make a bad fried potato, right?
No, that's so true. But it helps to have something you call clabber, which is a chive and caper sauce for these fried potato cakes, roasty. Yeah. That was very good to see. I'm just going to fly through some things here so that you know what's in this book, although it is posted at our website. The roasty recipe is there. The Cole Cannon recipe is on our site. In the book, though not posted, is buttermilk cornbread soup.
Ooh,
and as we've been
good.
Talking about
oh,
soups
yeah.
on the show, mm-hmm. that is
if
one.
If you hadn't mentioned that, I was going to.
Okay, that is really pretty, pretty
so
great.
Yummy.
There's a rabbit confit. There's a chili in here. I want to get, though, to your slow cooker roasted pork shoulder. That mm-hmm. is a beautiful piece of the pig right there, the
I
pork
read that
shoulder.
Recipe last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good, huh?
Yeah.
We love our slow cooker here on the show. So salt and pepper, the pork shoulder, or some people call it the butt, and you want the bone in because of the flavor.
Yes, ma'am.
So then you've got some apple cider vinegar and some sorghum syrup, which is a very interesting idea. Yellow onion and a little bit of cornstarch for thickening. Very glad to see that it's not flour. I'm beginning to not understand why people are using flour as a thickener at all. Why would you? So simple, all into the slow cooker. Do you brown the meat first?
Yes, you do. You know, this is one of the keys to this cuisine, which is that people were often using an inexpensive cut of meat, mm-hmm. and what it's seasoned with is largely thyme, and I don't mean the herb thyme, I mean T-I-M-E. You're browning that meat, you're having salt and pepper, you're having a little bit of these aromatics added to the broth, but what's really happening is the meat is seasoning itself. It's in that slow cooker, it's at a low temperature. Before the days of slow cookers, it would have been on the back of the stove, covered in a pot while you went about your work. And as time goes by, I guess we should cut into music here, right? The sinew of the meat begins to break down, and that, I think it's probably collagen, mm-hmm. adds flavor. The bone adds some substance and strength to it, and the fat that's on the meat seasons it as well. It becomes, it's alchemical. You know, it's the way that magicians used to try to take a base metal and turn it into gold. That's what happens with this inexpensive cut of meat when you
yeah.
give it that kind of time.
Can I say something, though? Because the Blue Ridge Mountains, there are people
yes.
there where you are who pasture the pigs. They raise
yes.
them humanely. They raise
yes.
heritage breed mm-hmm. pigs. So the flavor of that pork has got to be just
yeah.
out of this world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the great things about the slow food movement, the sustainable food movement, we're becoming wiser about the ingredient that you have. And that used to be a hard part of explaining this food to people, because if you start with a flavorless piece of meat or a watery pork that's been fattened totally on corn and doesn't have muscle, doesn't have all those things going for it, you're not going to get the same incredible flavor that I grew up eating the foods that were raised in my family.
So what do we
so
do?
True.
People are busy. They don't always have time to go to farm stands. Chris, what do we
right.
do to come as close as we can to what I just described? I guess you go to a local farm if you can.
Yeah, or you go to a butcher shop or a supermarket that has a good meat case. And you
exactly.
start asking, you know, do you have anything? A lot of places are starting to bring in local meats and stuff.
Absolutely.
Because if it's
exactly.
USDA slaughtered, you can sell it in supermarkets and stuff. It's not a lot, but every once in a while you do find it.
You do. And you look for, I mean, you can also look at the meat itself. And sometimes I find we have a grocery that caters somewhat to the Latino population in the mountains, and I find really good cuts of meat there, because a lot of times they're the ones that,
you
know,
I
like this pork shoulder that have the bone and the fat and those things still attached, because that's how people still cook.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for highlighting the region you're from and for doing this book. And that recipe that we just mentioned for the pork roast is on our website, foodschmooze.org. And her book is called, it looks like Victuals, but it's pronounced Vittles in the mountains. So thank you so, so much, Ronnie, for doing what you do.
You're welcome. Thank you all so
all
much
right.
for having me.
See ya.
Take care. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes and never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little party in your life, we're here and online all the time at foodschmooze.org. And of course, also on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.